WTIC, welcome to After Six. Joining us for his weekly visit, Michael Leibowitz, a prisoner in the Connecticut State Prison System. You can hear the beeps on the phone line. You can hear some noise in the background, perhaps. That's all part of the ambiance of incarceration. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Good to be here.
So we're going to talk about your life story, which I'm excited about. This is, you've given us a framework before in the past, but you've not gone into great detail, so have at it.
What I want the audience to do, though, is think of me as sort of a prototype.
Okay.
For the whole system, basically. And so when I ask my question at the end, I want them to understand that it has ramifications beyond just me. So now that I framed it in that way, both of my parents were heroin addicts. My father was an alcoholic. My parents divorced very young. And my mother raised me, and she had various boyfriends, a husband, all drug addicts. They would nod out in front of me. There was a shooting at my house when I was a little kid, maybe three. I was. My house was robbed. My father was cut with a hacksaw, and his friend was beat with a hammer. The house was raided on numerous occasions. My mother had, various overdoses. And I remember one time when I was 6 years old and I had a fight with a kid in the neighborhood and I went home crying and my mother told me to go hit him with a beer bottle. And when I was 12 years old, my father was in prison and my stepfather was staying at the house. And my father told me over the phone that what I should do is go get myself a bat and come around, go out the front door and come around the back and hit him behind his kneecaps with the bat. So that's your rough framework.
All right, that's
there were positive influences in my life. I don't want to make it seem like it was all gloom and doom.
What were the positive influences?
Well, there were various police officers that tried to reach out to me. My grandfather was a law-abiding citizen. He was relatively wealthy, and, he was there for me. And I had an aunt and cousins who were there for me, teachers. So there were some positive influences. I don't think that they outweighed the bad, however.
Did you have siblings?
No siblings that I grew up with. I do have a sister that I've only just come to know in the last few years.
Any other family members in your life?
No.
And what would you say had the most impact on who you became as a person in your early adult years?
It's really hard to say, but there was this sort of dynamic going on inside me. I was small. I still am. I'm only 5'8", 160 pounds. But I wanted to be tough. I wanted to be one of the tough guys in the neighborhood, but I wasn't. And I had a father who had a reputation for being tough. My father, beat guys with bats, was always into fights, would fight the police. So that's kind of how I wanted to model myself. And being that I couldn't fight, what I did was I resorted to weapons. I became ruthless. And I remember when I was, I must have been 20 years old, and I shot a guy. And I came home, and I said to woke my father up, he was sleeping, and I said, "Hey, Dad, I just shot this guy." He said, "Okay, that's good," and he rolled right around and went back to sleep. It had no impact on him. So that is the, now you combine that with the parents in and out of jail my whole life, in drug rehab and whatnot, and it wasn't very good. And
well, what's the point of that particular story? It sounds like you thought he was going to be impressed that finally you'd done something to live up to his expectations.
Yes,
but that wasn't even good enough? Is that how you interpreted that?
No, I just interpreted it as he was tired and wanted to go to sleep. It didn't even really seem strange to me until later on, when I would come to think about this sort of stuff. And to backtrack a little bit, when I was 13, or just before I turned 13, my grandfather died. Now, I lived in a housing project with my mother in Wethersfield, and my grandfather had been paying our rent. So when he died, we ended up getting evicted, and I moved in with my grandmother in a nice house, and she had a lot of money, but she was also an alcoholic, so she would get drunk and periodically throw me out of the house. Now, my reason for all that isn't to get sympathy or anything, but just to show you what occurred prior to what happened to lead me in here. So when I was 21 years old, after a series of crimes, and anybody that wants to can look up the slew of them, but the main one was I ordered my friends, three of them, to stab my ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. Now, that ended up getting me a 27-year prison sentence, consecutive with the six I was already doing, which led to 33.
Wait a sec. So, you skipped over the six you were already doing.
I got a 6-year sentence. I hit two kids in the face with a hammer, and I got caught with a gun and some drugs, and so I got a 6-year sentence for that.
And when did you start behaving in such overtly dangerous ways that you had run-ins with the law? Did this suddenly appear when you got into your 20s, or what was high school like?
No, like I said, when I was 6 years old, I hit a kid in the head.
Well, what was high school like?
High school was trying to impress people with violence and other antics and getting high and getting drunk and sleeping around.
But not this kind of highly criminal
violence. Not as severe, no. Not as severe. It wasn't as bad. I was violent, but not as violent.
And did you have run-ins with school? Did you get thrown out of school?
I was expelled in 8th grade. I was expelled again in 9th grade. Expelled again in 10th grade. I was bounced around to various schools. None of them could contain me, and I ended up a dropout. I dropped out finally for the last time when I was 19.
Okay. We're talking to Michael Leibowitz. He's a regular on After Six. He's a prisoner in the state system, and he's telling us his life story so that we can understand him in the context of prison and the prison system and be able to use him as part of our understanding for considering ideas for prison reform and how maybe there could be better ways to deal with prisoners. So what was your internal narrative? What did you tell yourself about your life? How did you feel about these activities?
I felt like a victim of a terrible childhood and terrible parents who was therefore entitled to do whatever I wanted to do, and that was it. I wanted to be a gangster. I watched gangster movies. I tried to model myself on gangsters, and that's what I wanted to be.
Was there a particular guy from a movie?
No. I mean, I liked Meyer Lansky. I liked Al Capone. I got a tattoo of Al Capone on my right bicep. Those are the kind of people that I like. Those are the type of people that I worship.
Okay, so you were already sentenced to 6 years in prison when you got charged with... Were you in prison when you had your friends go stab your...
No. I was out on bond.
Okay. And...
Now...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I apologize if I seem hurried. There's just a lot to get to, and I want to get it all in.
Yeah, that's fine.
Now, that part of the story I told for a very specific reason, because the question now becomes, when I face the judge, knowing my upbringing, and I left a lot of bad stuff out, am I responsible for my behavior when I'm in front of that judge, and do I deserve to be punished? And my answer to that question is unequivocally yes. I needed to be taken off the street for society's protection, and I deserve to be punished significantly. No questions asked. So now after that, I'm incarcerated. Now, the first few years of my incarceration, I waffled back and forth between trying to change and getting, relapsing, getting involved in drugs and gambling and, just getting into that type of stuff.
How did you feel about getting locked up in the first place? What was your...
I thought I was a victim. I thought it was everybody else's fault but mine.
And did you think it was a problem, or it sounds like you were negative, you felt negatively towards it?
I thought I was a victim. I thought, who the hell are they to put me in prison after everything I've been through?
But given how you behaved, you knew the cause and effect of things.
So what? I was justified. How come nobody protected me? I mean, that was my thought process. I'm not saying that now. I'm just saying at the time, I thought, well, where were these people when, I was being left home alone for days on end, or my parents were teaching me to be violent and to shoot people?
Right. All of your modeling was for negative behavior. Nobody from the big institutions that were now taking your liberties away did anything to protect you.
Right. So that was my thought process. Now, when we fast forward to 2004, I quit doing drugs, I quit gambling, and I decided to do a full court press to turn my life around.
Wait, what was 2004? You had been in prison for a while?
I had been in prison for a while, and I just had enough.
How long? What year were you locked up?
1997.
Okay, so you'd been in there for 7 years.
Yes.
And you were doing drugs while you were in prison?
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, I would tell my parents to bring me the drugs. They would, and I'd smuggle them in and do them, or just buy them on the compound.
Wow. So what was the moment? What happened for you to start to view things differently?
I really don't know. I mean, I had been reading all that time, so I had been studying, and I realized that I wanted more out of life, and it was just like a click. I just said, well, if I want more out of life, this isn't going to get me there. So I've got to do something different. So I started on a self-improvement campaign with my friend, my best friend, Brett McCall. We weren't yet cellmates. Your listeners who listen regularly will know he ended up my cellmate for 11 years, but at that time he wasn't. But we engulfed on this path together.
I should mention that you guys wrote a book together, Down the Rabbit Hole, How the Culture of Corrections Encourages Crime.
Yes.
And, yeah, so go ahead.
Okay, so the self-improvement process is very difficult, and it's the only way I can really speak of it is to tell of my external accomplishments so maybe people can understand. Since I've been in prison, I've read well over 500 books. I have two associate's degrees, one in psychology, one in paralegal studies. I completed a certificate program in drug and alcohol counseling, a certificate program in psychology and social work. Brett McCall and I designed the Imprison Program, which is a rehabilitation program for inmates, which was up and running at McDougal, and we facilitated it for 4 years. And we wrote the aforementioned book, Down the Rabbit Hole. And I've also done every program that I've been able to, as terrible as I think they are, I still did them, and I've had no tickets in my 22 years of incarceration.
What does that mean, no tickets?
It means I haven't gotten in any trouble since I've been in prison, none. And I have nothing but excellent work evaluations for every job I've ever held in prison.
All right, Michael Leibowitz, longtime prisoner, 22 years in prison. You are obviously a different man, although I have to say not everybody's convinced. There are people who call and say, oh, that guy, he's faking it. He's just pretending to be a transformed human being. He's not really rehabilitated, as I think there's always going to be that kind of cynicism and fear. But my answer to that is that who you are is so extraordinary, given the background that you've laid out and given the crimes that you've committed and given that you've been behind bars since you were reached the age of adulthood, that if you were able to pull off this kind of scam,
you have 1 minute left.
I don't know how we can differentiate the scamming you pretending to be a reformed guy from somebody who would be reformed when you get out. I mean, I think I don't buy that argument. I don't see how it would work. You're obviously a different person than that young man who went to prison.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I do understand the detractors. I understand their point of view, although I disagree with it. So I'm going to call you right back.
Thank you, Michael.
Out of time. Okay.
The caller has hung up.
Continuing with Michael Leibowitz on WTIC. Prisoner, 22 years in the state system. Okay. So now we've got you at this stage of life. You've been in prison all these years. You're in your mid-40s.
Not quite yet, Todd. Let's not make me older than I am. I'm 40.
Let's just round up and call it 50.
Let's say early 40s, maybe late 30s.
All right, so would you make an argument that you're somebody who should be considered in some kind of early release program that doesn't exist that would get you out even earlier than the present early release programs do?
I don't want to make that argument at all because I want to simply give the objective facts as best as I can, and I want your audience to answer that question for us. I should add now, while I've been in prison going through all this change, in the course of 1 year, between 2008 and 2009, my mother committed suicide, my aunt committed suicide, and one of my best friends committed suicide. So
yikes.
I have, given that, all that, I now have 15 years of behaving in a pro-social way. And if you say my adult year started at 18 to 27, I behaved in an antisocial way. They're calling recall, Todd. We have an emergency recall, so I'm going to have to call you back. I hope that's okay.
When might that happen, do you think?
I haven't got the slightest idea. Hopefully a couple minutes.
Yeah, we'll probably have to bag it, Michael, and finish up another time.
Okay, that's okay.
All right,
Todd.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye-bye.
The caller has hung up.
We're reconnecting with Michael Leibowitz and continuing this conversation at another time because we got cut off. So we'll just go right back into our conversation with Mike. He's got a pretty good idea where we left off. Go ahead, Michael.
So I've also spent more time in prison now that I spent outside of prison. So I have 22 years in, 21 years out. Now, it's important to keep in mind that there's four main purposes for incarceration: incapacitation, punishment, deterrence, and rehabilitation.
Incapacitation means to make sure you can't bother anybody else?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I basically, society is protected from me. I'm put out of commission.
Okay.
So the question to ask in assessing whether
Wait, just run through each of those, make sure we understand them.
I was going to go, that's what I'm getting ready to do, Todd. You're ahead of me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. So incapacitation, let me back up a little bit. So in assessing whether I should be let out early, we should go over the four of those. Incapacitation means that society needs to be protected from an offender, so that offender is removed from the street or taken out of freedom. So the question there would be, am I still a threat to society? Does society need to be protected from me? Then when it comes to punishment, which is the next purpose of incarceration, the question would be, is for the crimes that I was convicted of, is 22 years enough, or do I need more? And then when it comes to deterrence, you have to keep
Wait a second. How is that even... How do you decide that? I mean, there's no empirical way to measure that. The only measure we have is really that the laws were made, and that's some reflection of societal perceptions of appropriate punishment.
And that's true. But within that, for instance, I was convicted of conspiracy and accessory to first-degree burglary. That's the crime I got most of my time for. Now, for that crime, you can get anywhere from 5 to 20 years. So there's some range in there.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that get convicted of that don't get as much time as I got. So
okay, and if you were going to be reconsidered at this point for early release and they're going back over these sentences, they could also say that there was nothing inappropriate about the sentence you received, but given the way you've turned yourself around during your time in prison, that would justify going to accepted norms of lower punishment?
Yes. So then the next thing is deterrence. Now, there's two types of deterrence. There's what's called specific deterrence and general deterrence. So specific deterrence means, has this period of incarceration deterred me from committing future crimes? General deterrence means, are other people, if they see how much time I've done, would they be deterred? So in other words, is 22 years enough to deter somebody else from committing the same types of crimes that I've committed?
Okay.
Now there's a flip side to that I think is interesting, because the whole idea of general deterrence is that people learn by watching other people, that you can see the consequences of somebody else's actions and decide whether to engage in conduct or not. And I think that's very true. But this is an argument I actually made in the past to the prosecutor, is that the other inmates in prison have seen the work I've put in to alter my behavior. So if they see all the work that I've put in for all the years I've put it in and then don't get rewarded for it, that might deter them from engaging in reform.
Okay. We don't have that much time left, though, so let's not...
Okay.
Because I want to hear you make a case for yourself.
So the last thing is rehabilitation. Am I rehabilitated? I think the evidence indicates yes. Quickly, I've already received a 2-year sentence reduction. The question I want your audience to answer for me is that just right? Is it not enough? Or is it too much? Should I have not received anything? My case is very simple. I believe in justice, first and foremost, personal responsibility. When I behaved badly, I was rightly punished, removed from society. But I've now spent more time working on myself and doing what's right. And I think that justice would demand that I receive more time off than the 2 years that I got off. And I'm very grateful to the prosecutor for that 2 years, don't get me wrong, but I just think that justice would demand that I get more. That's my personal opinion, but I'm obviously not objective, which is one of the reasons I'd like to hear what objective people have to say. But also going forward with criminal justice reform, I think that the way somebody views how I should be treated would go a long way to showing what reforms I think should be put in place.
So what do you think would be the most common argument against letting you out?
that I received due process and got a good sentence. The sentence was fair. That I've committed crimes for which I've never been convicted of, that nobody knows about. And that no matter how much I've demonstrated in prison I can live, I haven't shown that I can live in free society. So there's no telling how I behave when I get out. I think those would be the three strongest.
Okay. And which do you think would pop up most frequently?
I think the skepticism about my actual reform.
Yeah.
I think that people, and it, look, I mean, it, rightfully so. I've got the burden of proof is on me. So I can understand that, but I think
that's true whenever you're released.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. But no matter what happens, the very most they can hold me is 9 more years, and that's very unlikely. It's likely that I get out on parole in 4.5, and even if I didn't, not even 4.5, 4 years and a couple months. Even if I didn't, with the good time I've received, I'd be out in about 6. So I'm getting out no matter what, relatively soon.
Yeah, and all those questions will be answered.
Anyways. And the question
this is really about whether certain people, based on their behavior, should have the chance to have a reassessment take place of their sentence.
Yes. Do we want to have an incentive-based system? And it goes both ways, as far as punishment being a deterrent, but also reform getting rewarded. And
yeah,
I believe in that.
That's one part of an incentive-based system, but another part of it would just be one that maximizes the efficiency of the prison and maximizes the justice. So the purposes of putting somebody behind bars, if they've been met, then why keep somebody behind bars?
Well, yeah, ultimately, the incentive for society, I believe, in the research that I've done indicates, would be to have an incentive-based system where people have the motivation to reform, because that ultimately makes society safer, and I think that's ultimately what prison reform should be about. It's not about me as an individual or any inmate as an individual. It's about making society safer and preventing people from being harmed.
All right, Michael Leibowitz. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Todd. I really appreciate it.